What's going on, comic fam? It's your boy, the Bearded Comic Bro, and I am joined by comic creator Bob Sally. Thank you so much for joining me.
Thanks for having me, man. I really appreciate it. And we've been talking over Twitter. And it's been awesome. And I'm so glad that you enjoyed the latest thing that I got putting out there. And I'm really excited to get other people aware of it and get them out there at the comic shops and buying it up.
Awesome. So what you're hinting at is last week I picked up a comic called Broken Gargoyles, and I read it. I reached out to you instantly. I was like, I got to talk to you about this. This is a great book. So, and I want to hop into that real quick. And I guess to kind of fade into that, I always kind of just like to ask my guests when they come on, like, how did you get into creating comics?
I was always writing, even like at a young age. Like I started reading comics probably when I was like 8 years old. And, as I think a lot of kids do, like you think like, I want to make my own comics, and you start drawing and coming up with your own stories. And so it was really like, I really wanted to, like, I couldn't draw to save my life. But you did it anyway. And like, the stories I would come up with, I was really into the X-Men. Okay. The X-Men Inferno mega series was like the first thing that I started reading, like right from X-Men 241, which was the very first X-Men Inferno series. And so like when I was doing my own comics, like I was drawing like Wolverine, like trying to like make him a little bit different and giving him like a different name, but he essentially had the same costume, and he had the the claws, because as kids we have no imagination,
right?
And I just did that. Like I loved Colossus. Reading comic books just really opened up a world of imagination for me. I was into the Star Wars and G.I. Joe and all that. But comic books was like, it was special because it was, you're following a series, and it's like, you knew that every week you're going to go out and like the next book's going to be out. So it was almost like, as kids, like, I don't think that we really followed where you're watching, Home Improvement. And, you're like, all right, I got to wait a week to watch the next one, because they were just like standalone. So
right.
I think like comic books was like the first real sense of like a drama that you watched, and you had to wait until for that cliffhanger. You had to wait until the next story. So, it was, I think like all of us comic fans, like we know the experience. It's Wednesday. And it's like, your mom gives you your allowance and you ride your bike to the local comic shop, and, you're flipping through everything, but you're like, this one right here I have to have. So that was it. Like that got me in like really into comics, but obviously you grow up and you're like, I'm not going to write comic books. Like, it's impossible. Like back in the day, like there wasn't Image, there wasn't Dark Horse. Like it was just Marvel and DC. It was like thinking about like how you could possibly walk in and just start writing comic books. It just seemed like, it seemed impossible.
Right.
And now with like technology and the internet, it's not like you can self-publish, and through self-publishing and social media and getting your book out there on social media and having exposure that way, can get eyes on it. Like I did, like Source Point Press saw what I was doing. I talked to them at a convention, and we decided that, that they wanted to pick up my book. So those are the things like, where you slowly matriculate into the industry. But I never really thought, I think I got to a point where I'm like, I'm going to write novels. Like I'm going to be a real writer, and I'm going to write real stories, the great American novel. And I wrote some short stories and I wrote some poems, it just never, you in your craft, like you feel like you're not doing it well. You feel like, you should be doing it better, or, you want more out of yourself. I was frustrated with, my prose. And I hit writer's block hard. And then one day, like I came up with this idea about garbage men in space. And I just thought, I was like, I want to try a different type of way of telling the story. And I think I just like, you know, that back of your head is like, you know, you like comics. Let's do a comic book. So, you know, of course, like, you know, like anybody who has no idea what they're doing, you're like, all right, well, you know, comic, like you go on. And I think the first thing I saw was Dark Horse Comics had a submissions link on their website. So, of course, I'm like, if they have a submissions line, then they are actively looking for new stuff. And, you know, they had like their template of how they wanted their scripts to look. So, of course, I'm like, well, if I'm going to submit to Dark Horse, I'm going to use their template. And I wrote the script. And I just thought, like, you send them the script. And if they like it, then they buy it off of you. Totally not the case. but anyway, that's kind of how I got into it. And then through talking to people and networking, you know, people told you, like, they're like, well, the best thing you could do is make the comic. Yeah. Find an artist, produce the comic, and distribute it, you know, give it away, come up with an online store, go to conventions, and build it that way. So that's what I did. You know, I got tables at conventions. At first I was sharing with another, you know, independent creator. We'd share a table, like, you know, you got 3 feet of a 6-foot table and you're right. Both talking over each other. But it was just like, that's kind of like the fraternity and the sorority of comics is, you know, just, you know, roughing it. And, you know, now even with Source Point Press, like, you know, they put us up in hotels, but, you know, they'll put 3 of us in a hotel, 4 of us in a hotel together. So it's tight quarters, but you come out of that weekend where you're like, you know, I like, you know, I didn't know this person that well, but I just spent a whole weekend with them. Very close, and you know, and now I love this person.
That's awesome.
So that's kind of, you know, that's my, you know, abridged version of how I got from you know, being a little 8-year-old drawing and writing my own comics to, you know, doing Broken Gargoyles and having it out there through Previews World.
So what was your first? So you kind of said you made it sound like people were telling you, hey, write your create your comic first, and then kind of bring it out there, and you did that at conventions, and Source Point kind of saw what you were doing. And is that kind of how you got connected with them? And if so, like, what was the first?
I saw what they were doing. Like, I mean, it's, you know, there's a lot of people in the industry, but it's all, if you're paying attention, it's very small because, you know, the internet and social media, it makes it small. So it's hard not to, if you're out there and you're active, it's hard not to see what other people are doing.
Right.
And I'm a fan of comics. I'm a fan of people who are out there busting their ass and trying to just make their passion and put their heart out there. So I'm very active with like talking to people and connecting with people of all different levels.
Right.
So when I saw, you know, Source Point Press was like, you know, to me, I was like, that's a great place to be.
Right.
And I really wanted to work with them. And I didn't really know Travis McIntyre, who is the editor in chief. Okay. I knew Josh Warner, like not that well, but he's the art director. I saw what like Casey Pierce was doing and Greg Wright were doing. Mm-hmm. So they were hustling. They were hustling like with a label, and I was hustling on my own.
Right.
So I really was like, I wanna be in their house. and we met at C2E2 the first year I ever went to C2E2, which I think was, I want to say it was in like 2015. Okay. I went to C2E2 and I met Travis and Josh and Casey and. We talked, and you know, it was really nice. And I think it was, you know, they saw the work ethic that I had and I saw the work ethic that they had, and we really just wanted to work together. And, yeah. And it's been amazing. I mean, I honestly, like, I love being a part of Source Point Press, and, I've watching them grow has been awesome. It's, you know, being inside that, you know, that house and watching it get bigger and bigger. And watching more and more happens, like more and more success happen, you really get a sense of pride for what they're doing.
Oh, absolutely. That's cool. So let's move into kind of the book that drew me into finding out a little bit more about yourself. So if someone is watching this interview and they haven't had a chance to pick up Broken Gargoyles yet, give them an elevator pitch, kind of like what's it about?
So it's kind of got the, well, it's post World War I America, and it's two injured veterans come home from World War I, facially mutilated, and their experience coming home was not the same as what others' experiences were. Broken Gargoyles is a, in fact, it's a real term that these people gave themselves. And, you know, when, and obviously, you know, the 1920s is very different from 2020s, but at the same time, you know, the thing still resonates. It's, you know, there's still a better way. There could be better way for these people coming home from war. But when these people came home from war, I mean, they lost their jobs because people didn't want to see them. And, you know, their wives left them. They lost their jobs. They turned to alcoholism. A lot of them committed suicide, you know. And the more and more I researched it, the more and more I thought, like, what life would be like where you can't see yourself. Or if you can't express, you know, we express a lot through our facial, like through our face, that without even saying words, and just imagining, like, not being able to do that.
Right.
And, you know, how maddening that would be. So when I came up with the idea, it's somebody actually called it, like, I can't remember if it was like Metal Gear Solid meets Saving Private Ryan. I think it's kind of like got like a, more of like a Mad Max meets, you know, Grapes of Wrath or like some. I've had such a really hard time coming up with an elevator pitch for it. Because it's just, it's very complex. It's not just like, it's not your typical just good versus evil. You know, it's, you know, you've read it. It's very gray. Everybody's living in a very gray world. And I picked up that from watching Breaking Bad. Breaking Bad was one of my favorite shows. And slowly as I was watching Breaking Bad, like I realized, I'm like, there's really no clear cut, like, good guy or bad guy,
right?
In this, like, everybody's kind of just living, like, towing the line. And I like that. And the more and more I read about, you know, just the way, you know, 1920s history in America, it's there was the same thing, like, where it was like there was the roaring 20s where, like, it was almost like a utopia. But also, like, there was, you know, the decline of the agricultural industry. You know, you had vets that were homeless and had nowhere to go. And they created a city in Central Park in New York. And the police came and raided them and, like, you know, killed people. So there was also this very dystopian reality to the times. So, you know, reading all about that, you just feel like you're like, there's got to be a story there. And, you know, cultivating that and bringing, like, finding characters and digging into the characters, it came up with a story. And Travis McIntyre, who's the editor in chief, he suggested that we do it and, you know, do it as a diesel punk. And, you know, at the time, like, I knew what steampunk was, I knew what cyberpunk was. I've heard of diesel punk, but I didn't really know anything about it. So while I was researching it, you know, it really, like, fit. And I think it kind of, I don't want to say softens the blow of the reality, but it makes it easier. And it makes it easier to read. It makes it easier to accept what's going on.
Right.
And I don't know if, you know, that's not a PC thing to say as you're, you know, you're writing something about actual history. But the diesel punk aspect of it, I think, as a writer, I was talking about this yesterday. As a writer, you always, like, your editors will tell you this, your professors will tell you this. But if you can take something out of the story and it doesn't change the story, then you don't need it in there. And with this story, like, I think it really needed the diesel punk aspect of it. And, you know, whether it's because it's a vehicle for being able to move the story quicker. You know, it's like Gene Roddenberry said, the whole reason that he came up with beaming in Star Trek, I don't know if you're aware of this, but the whole reason that he came up with beaming, you know, beaming them down.
Yeah.
The whole reason he came up with the whole technology of beaming them down to a planet was because he was like, I only have so much time every episode, and I can't have a ship going down to a planet and coming back to a planet every episode. So I needed to make it quicker. So he made a beaming. So, you know, and it, so with this being diesel punk, there are certain things that create a vehicle for telling the story in a timely manner. Right. But, you know, like in the 1920s, like you don't have, you know, this flying, you know, diesel punk submarine that can get somebody from New York to Arizona in hours. So, you know, that helped tell the story. But, you know, it's just it works for it somehow. So I hope that when people are reading it, that they appreciate it.
Yeah, I mean, it makes sense, like you're saying, of like trying to find a mode that you can say, like, because your story takes place in, I think it starts in New York, maybe I'm a big city, but then, like, goes right over to Arizona, kind of. And it's like, you have to have a believable way in 1920s of like, how do we get from here to there?
Yeah, how do we get from one to the, yeah, exactly. So it works.
Yeah.
Hopefully.
Well, it does, I think. And it's, I was trying to, when I was reading it, trying to place like where it fits. And like, cause you said it's like that Mad Max vibe. And, you know, if you, the first page, you have like these towering, really cool looking buildings. So it looks more like a, you know, a more modern day. And then you have like a robot given like the newspaper kind of thing and things like this. So it's like, but it's 1920. So where does it fit? So the nice to hear that diesel punk kind of.
Right. And I think with the diesel punk, like you, it helped to show, to really like put an emphasis on, you know, showing like the flourishing 1%.
Right.
While, you know, you also go and you see the declining of, you know, middle America, where, you know, and obviously like where the story's slated for 9 issues. So it's going to, we're going to dive into, like, we're going to be in the Oklahoma farming area. Okay. So we're going to dive into like seeing like where in the 19, like, you know, during World War I, American agriculture was flourishing because we were feeding the war. And then after the war was over, you know, all of this was put into the American agriculture industry, farming industry. But then when the war was over, like the other countries were like, all right, well, now we need to get our farming back. So we can't use you anymore. So then these people were like, well, wait a minute. Like, we were ready to do this. And it's like, so they, a lot of people went bankrupt on their farms, lost their farms to banks. And, you know, so we're going to dive into that as well. Like, so as I guess what I could say is like, as I started reading more and more about the history of the 1920s and the post-World War I America, there was just so much going on that I feel like maybe a lot of people, like when people think of 1920s, they just automatically think of the Roaring Twenties.
Right.
But, you know, I want to tell the story about, you know, those who, you know, were overshadowed by the, you know, the high rises in New York City. Mm-hmm. So, you know, also putting in a diesel punk fashion, it's visually, it gives a better sense of like, this is, you know, this diesel punk is gold and it's brand new and it's, you know, it's polished, where this is rusty and, you know, broken down.
Yeah. No, that's a great, and I was going to ask you, you know, like what the arc, so you said, you're imagining 9 issues for this. Is that something that you kind of have already drawn out where you're taking it up to the 9 issues?
Yeah. I mean, it's outlined for 9 issues. You know, the plan, it was one of those things where you're like, all right, 9 issues, 3 volumes, you know, like, you
get right.
So one, two, and three is a completed story.
Gotcha.
And then 4, 5, and 6 is a completed story. And then 7, 8, and 9 is a completed story. But you could also, you could read them all the way through and, you know, be like, all right, this one picks up after that one.
Okay.
The trick is, you know, well, you wouldn't be able to pick up 4 and like, you know, be like, all right, I, you know, it's like, you'd have to go back, which, you know, we feel like, all right, well, you know, during the marketing of it, which, you know, we can edit this and nobody needs to see this, but this is all like the ins and outs of marketing when you get into, you know, publishing your book and putting it out in previews, where it's like, all right, we do 1, 2, and 3. And then when 4 comes out, we put out the trade of 1, 2, and 3, the first book. So when people are buying 4, we can say, well, if you haven't read 1, 2, and 3, buy the trade, that'll catch you up.
Yeah.
And
well, so I think that's a smart idea. I mean, because that's, you know, there's the inside and outs of, you know, working in the comic industry that some people like, well, why is it 9? Like, you know, my first initial thought was 9. That seems like an odd number. But as soon as you say like 3 stories, 3 stories, 3 stories, like, oh yeah. And then you have a trade, because you get that a lot of, you know, you might be sitting on a book for a while, you know, like, I don't know, I want to check it out. And then people are like, you've got to get this. And so if you can have a trade, like, oh, cool, I can get it at issue 4.
Well, you know, and it's exactly right. Like, I mean, East of West is a perfect example of this. So East of West did, you know, like I started reading East of West right from the beginning. And when I suggested it to people, like, I would be like, you know, I would tell them, I'd be like, well, you can get, you know, you can get the trade paperback of, you know, 1 through 5 or whatever it was.
Right.
And then you can jump on. And I think in on the flip side of it, 7 to Eternity, I didn't start reading that, but I picked up the first volume and read that when the next volume started coming out in single issues.
Right.
So it is a good, you know, it's a good method to, like, you know, when you're plotting it out, you realize, you're like, well, you know, if we don't do that, people are gonna be like, well, I have no way of getting issues 1, 2, and 3 anymore. You know, so, but it's like, but if you go to a comic shop and they're like, well, here's volume 1 and here's issue 1 of volume 2, you know, and comic shops are smart that way. They know what they're doing.
Right. And
that's always the upsell.
And it makes sense, because you're right. Like, you see something on the rack and you're like, oh, that sounds cool. Oh, issue 4, chances of, you know, do you guys have 1, 2, and 3? No. Oh, well, shoot. I'm not going to read 4.
Yeah, well, then I'm not going to get an issue 4, you know.
Because people don't want it. A lot of people don't want to jump into the story. But I think with so much that's out there, sometimes you can get very late to, you know, a comic series that you're like, I think I'd like this. And so that's like a really smart move. So let's talk about kind of the process then with this Broken Gargoyles a little bit. So you kind of came up with this idea. It sounds like you started writing it. You have a massive team on this of, it seems, of like, from the pencil and ink with Stan, and the colors by Marco and Robert, and the lettering by Justin. Like,
then there's the team that did the cover.
Right.
So
how does that work? How does all that come together for you?
Yeah, I mean, it worked really well. Stan was the first, when I first started coming up with the concept of this idea, Stan's a good friend of mine. I've worked on short stories with him. This is the first time I've ever worked on an extended series with him, but I did 2 short stories with him, and I love his work. I always wanted to do something with him. And when I came up with this concept, I just thought, I was like, his like hard lines would be perfect for it. And I gave him like the concept of the characters, and he gave me like characters where it was like, you know, right out of Mad Max. Like, we're talking post-apocalyptic, like William Manco had like a belt with like a license plate, a banged up license. I was like, no, we're going 1920s diesel punk with this, not post-apocalyptic future. Right. So, I think I might still have those images and I'll have to post them, but
that's
funny. It was, you know, I think like, you know, the bad guy, his boots had like barbed wire all around them. Like, it was badass.
Yeah.
This isn't going to work for, you know, post World War I, but his art was amazing. And he does all digital. Okay. So, you know, it's not like it used to be, like where somebody's doing pencils and then somebody does ink. It can be. Right now, like for the issue 3, like I have Mike Lilly, who has worked on Marvel and DC books. I have him doing the layouts, and he's doing them like on that, you know, the you know, page board,
yeah,
blue pencil, scans it, gives it to Stan, and Stan goes over it digitally, which is awesome. And I love that. And then, you know, Robert, so in issue one, we had Marco Pagnotta was working on the colors, and then Robert Nugent came on and finished them. And it's just, it's a great process. It's, it teaches you to trust like the people that you work with. And you know, it's one of those things where when you're working with a team, it's like anything, it's like any job, any kind of freelance job. Like, you know, if you do a good job, then, you know, you're going to get more work.
Right.
And these guys work great together, you know, like Stan and Robert, like Stan does he finishes a page and he sends it to me. And I know, like, I don't even have to ask him, like Robert has it and Robert's sending it to his flatter's putting the colors on it. And then when I get all the pages, I take all the pages and I give it to Justin with the fit, like with the final script, with the final dialogue, and he does all that. And by the time he's done with it, he puts it, formats it, sends it to Source Point Press. You know, we're all drinking.
Nice. That's the way it goes.
It can be nerve wracking, but if you put a good team together, you know, it's effortless. Like you have Ogre back there. Ogres.
Yeah. Yep.
Worked with Sean Daly. Sean Daly did the art, the colors, the lettering, soup to nuts. So I gave him the script and I was like, I'm going to go write. I was like, you good? Yep. I was like, I'm going to go write something else now. And Sean just took care of everything. Like,
yeah.
If you're not a fan of Sean Daly, please look him up. The guy is a genius. He is going to be, doing things, you know, that like, you know, I'm working with him as much as I can right now.
Nice.
Because I know eventually I won't be able to.
And you're like, hey, remember me?
Yeah, exactly. He's just amazing.
That's awesome. Well, it's cool to see, because you get this like this idea of like, well, how does this kind of process work, and you know, finding all these people and you know, getting connected, because I'm sure you guys all have different ideas and things that have to come together. And so it's like anything, you got to find that right team that clicks and works together.
Yeah. And you know, the most important thing, anybody who's watching this, that's thinking like, well, I want to get into comics. The most important thing is, and this is something I got two bits of information, three bits of information from Rick Remender. Rick Remender is, you know, one of my top three writers of all time. I love Rick Remender. And part of the reason I love him is because he took the time to talk to me, which speaks volumes to people. And it's one of the things where I feel like I want to do the same thing. Like I never want to blow anybody off. Like I want to talk to people. I want to, if somebody's naturally interested in what's going on, like I want to give them the time, because I know any kind of advice could save them time and money.
Right.
And Rick Remender said to me, the three bits of advice Rick Remender said to me was, write, 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 and then write. And he said, go to cons, go to cons, go to cons, and then go to more cons. And then the third bit of advice he said is, he said, network with people that are on your level. Don't, you know, you're self-publishing, you know, and I'm sitting here talking to him. So this is like probably his way of being like, don't talk to me. But I'm self-publishing. I don't have a publisher. But he's like, you know, don't sit there and try to like, you know, reach out to like Jonathan Hickman or Jim Lee. Like, find the people that are going through what you're going through.
Right.
You know, network with the people that are also self-publishing, that, you know, are hustling, because you're going to get more out of them. You know, you're going to find more opportunity with them than if you're like, you know, asking Mike Mignola if he could do a cover for you, because he's just going to ignore you. You know, but so that was really important. And I think like I've always tried to tell people that, like, you know, network, like find other people that, if you're at a convention and you are, if you have your, you know, Kaboom printed comic book that you did yourself, you know, hand it out to as many publishers as you want, but also look for the other guy that's doing the same thing and be friends with that guy. And together you guys are stronger and you guys are, you know, working as a team to go out there and push each other's stuff.
Well, I mean, it makes the idea makes sense. I mean, I follow a lot of creators on, you know, Twitter and Instagram. And right now, in the midst of everything that's going on in the world, you don't have cons, right? We're not going to cons. We're not getting to go that. So, you know, YouTubers were trying to like, hey, will you guys talk to us? Because we need something like this.
Right.
I follow a lot of comic creators that are doing Kickstarters, right? And you will see them like promoting each other's Kickstarters. You're like, hey, I know you're supporting me, but also support this person. And I think it's kind of very similar to what you're saying. Find people who are kind of in the same boat as you, that you're going the same route, because you guys are going to be able to help each other grow and, you know, and have that rhythm and connection with that, and might be able to benefit each other.
Absolutely.
Which I think is just brilliant. So, well, I don't want to take up too much of your time. I appreciate you spending some time. So anything else that I know we're focusing on Broken Gargoyles here. Anything else that is kind of in your realm that you want to share or can share that you're kind of working on, or are you just focusing right now on Broken Gargoyles?
Right now, I mean, if you go to oxeyemedia.com and you check out their store, you can, that's SourcePoint Press's online web store.
Okay.
They also do Deepwater Games, which they have amazing board games that they are putting out. But check out SourcePoint Press and support your, support the independents. You know, go out there, buy Scout Comics, go out, buy Mad Cave Comics, buy SourcePoint Press Comics, buy Vault Comics. Like, it's DC and Marvel are great, but there's a lot of really good content out there by these mid-level publishers that your support with them, going out to your comic shop and asking for SourcePoint Press, Mad Cave, Scout Comics, the more and more people go out there and put those books in their pull list, it raises an eyebrow for these shops to keep looking at them. And if they're buying them for you, they might be like, you know what, I'm going to put a couple more on my list because I know some other people that come in here that might like them. And that's how, small press grows into mid-level press to getting up there and competing. Yeah. So, please, I know most people do, but, if you haven't, when you're going out there and getting your Spider-Man, your X-Men, look in the back pages, look in those back green pages of previews. And just, say to yourself, I'm going to buy one independent comic book. And hopefully you'll like it. And this is the thing about independent comic books. We're not in competition with each other, because if you buy an independent comic book and you like it, then or next month, you're going to say, I'm going to get two. And if you like those two, maybe you'll be like, I'm going to throw in a third. And that's how we, as independent and small to medium press creators and publishers, grow. Is by you going to comic shops and ordering our comics, putting them on your pull list, and raising awareness with those shops. Like, that word of mouth keeps us going and getting bigger.
That's great. I walked into my shop today, and it's funny because I posted when we're shooting this video, it's Wednesday, new comic book day, and I was like, yeah, like 15 books today, and like, two were DC, one was Marvel, everything else was indie. I'm like, wow, if I would have done this like 6 months ago when I started getting into comics, I was like, it was all DC, all Marvel, and a little, but I think like there are so many good stories, and like we're seeing this with Broken Gargoyles, right? Like, there are so many good stories out there that people need to hear, and I think that's just a testament to support. Small press is a huge, huge thing. So
absolutely, thank you so much. That means the world to me, and it means the world to so many people that are watching this and who are independent creators that are out there hustling every day. And, using Kickstarter as their means of distribution. Right. Right now, like we said, there's no conventions. And that, for independent self-published comic book creators, that's a huge means to, build their fan base and distribute their comics, which it's not happening right now. So, the more and more we can, I just did a podcast where they asked me, they're like, we want to pick a subject. We want to pick a something that we can focus on. And I was like, let's focus on self-published independent comic books that are on Kickstarter right now, or that you got through Kickstarter. Like, I don't want to sit there and be like, let's talk about Spider-Man. Let's talk about the guys out there right now that are doing it, not because they're published, but because they're just like, I have a story that I want to tell.
Yeah.
And I'm spending, I don't go out and buy myself a PlayStation 4. Instead, I'm taking that money and I'm paying an artist to do this because I have a love for what I'm doing. Like, let's talk about them.
Yeah.
Let's talk about that. And that's exactly that. You're going out and you're buying these independent comic books, and that makes that shop owner be like, hey, they're moving. So next time I'm going to buy more.
Yep.
So thank you very much.
Absolutely. So, well, everything too. That you said about like the links of where websites and stuff, I'll have that in the description of this video. So if you guys are watching, just click the drop tab below and you'll see. So Bob, where can people find you and kind of follow along with what you're doing as we close this up?
I mean, Facebook is like, I don't know. I get made fun of by some of my friends that are like, you know, a little bit younger than me. I love Facebook. I don't know. It's easy. Facebook Messenger. I always say like, that's my office. If you talk to me there, you and I talk on Twitter. Twitter's another place, like Twitter and Instagram. Like those are kind of like the big three that, you know, you can find me on. It's Bob Sally_comics is my Instagram. Bob_Sally is my Twitter. And if you type in Bob Sally on Facebook, you'll see me with a mic in my face. And that's me. Try not to follow my dad. He's not interesting at all when it comes to social media. But yeah, it's if you follow me on social media, I'm always available. There's very rarely, like I never, if somebody messages me, I never ignore it. Like I, you know, even just as simple as like, you know, a little back and forth exchange, like that's to me, like that's what, you know, it's all about. And that's how you build your fan base.
Well, again, thank you so much for hopping on. It's been
a blast. Thanks for having me, man. This was awesome.
And so for all you watching, hopefully you can find some time to curl up, grab an indie book, and nerd out. Peace.